I'm Rachel Otwell for NPR Illinois. Legislators of both parties are calling on the governor to voice support for the Equal Rights Amendment. While a ratification proposal passed the state Senate, it has yet to be called for a vote in the House, where it appears there may not yet be enough votes to gain the supermajority needed. But what's really at stake? I spoke with Vic Amar, a constitutional law expert and dean of the University of Illinois College of Law, to find out. The proposed ERA reads, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." Just exactly how that would be interpreted by states and courts if it were to be added to the Constitution is not totally clear, but how do you see it playing out in a practical sense?
It's really hard to know. Someone could argue that, well, the ERA is designed to do for gender what the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause does for race. So the ERA is designed to protect women from discrimination the way the Equal Protection Clause is designed to protect racial minorities or African Americans from discrimination. And before the 1970s, the Supreme Court really allowed states and the federal government to discriminate on the basis of gender in ways that really stigmatized women and sent a message that they weren't capable of contributing to society on equal terms. But beginning in the early 70s, largely through the work of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was not yet a justice on the Supreme Court and indeed not yet even a judge, but rather just an advocate, the Supreme Court has really taken gender equality pretty seriously.
A main point that opponents brought up starting in the 1970s when Congress passed the ERA and sent it to the states for ratification is that it would make on-demand abortion access the law of the land. Can you speak to that?
I don't think the language of the ERA necessarily dictates that, but that's a huge wild card that people are talking about even today as efforts to resurrect the ERA are underway.
Another thing we've heard from opponents is that the ERA would equate separation with discrimination. So they say, for instance, women would have to serve in the military in exact proportions to men. What would you say to that?
Those are scare tactics. Again, there probably are some situations where government sorts people using a gender classification that's allowed today that wouldn't be allowed under the Equal Rights Amendment. But even in the race arena, we don't have a truly colorblind world. The Constitution doesn't forbid government from ever taking race into account. I'll give you an example. When the police put out an APB on a suspect, they can describe the suspect height and age and build, but they can also describe the suspect's race. And that race is used by the police in deciding whom to pull over and to question. So we don't remotely live in a colorblind world where government can never make use of race. And we wouldn't live in a genderblind world even if the ERA were adopted. For example, I don't imagine the ERA would invalidate every public high school's decision in the United States to have a separate basketball team for varsity girls and varsity boys. I just don't see that as necessarily impermissibly or invidiously discriminating on the basis of gender. Now, we might ask some questions about whether the school should think about having a gender-neutral team. But because there are often good answers to those questions, government would still be able to continue to make use of gender in limited circumstances.
And so two of the major things that I've come across in my reporting, when you mentioned scare tactics, are the argument about abortion and then also bathrooms.
Well, I think there is a legal question of whether the government should have single gender bathrooms or instead just have public bathrooms that anybody can go into. I don't think personally that adoption of the ERA would require the government to have a bathroom that both men and women would use simultaneously if it weren't small enough to provide individual privacy to the one person who's in there. So I don't think that the ERA would prevent government from saying, look, we don't have the resources to provide small single-unit bathrooms, And so we still need to have bathrooms that are open to a larger number of people, and we're going to continue to do that on a gender differential basis. It's not clear to me that the ERA would prohibit that. But these are legal questions that arise in the same sense that, I mean, today no one would think that the government could have a separate men's bathroom for Black men and a separate men's bathroom for white men. You know, obviously there are legal questions that come up when new enactments are adopted.
I'm Rachel Otwell, and I'm speaking with Vic Amar, a constitutional law expert and dean of the University of Illinois College of Law. We're talking about the Equal Rights Amendment. Though the deadline for ratification passed back in 1982, it's back in the news as some Illinois lawmakers push to ratify it now. A measure passed the Senate and awaits a House vote. Vic, given the deadline and the current makeup of Congress and the White House, if Illinois and one more state were to ratify it, reaching the original 38 states needed, what might happen?
Then the question would be how Congress would treat the amendment, whether Congress would consider it part of the Constitution, whether the president would consider it part of the Constitution, whether states would consider it part of the Constitution, and whether the courts would consider it part of the Constitution. Now, we have this doctrine in federal courts known as political questions, where federal courts will decline to resolve some things that it thinks are better left to the political process. Some people will argue that, well, whether an amendment is actually effective constitutes a political question. I don't tend to agree with that. I think if a few other states adopt it and then a state passes a law that somebody wants to challenge as violating the ERA, then the federal courts and ultimately the Supreme Court will have to decide whether the ERA is a constraint upon the state. And then they'll have to give an answer to some of these questions about how we treat states that have rescinded a prior adoption and whether adoptions that take place after the last congressional deadline has already come and gone, the court will have to take those up. I agree these are unresolved, but I think that there are decent arguments that can't really count ratification as a full ratification after Congress has already closed the door on the ratification window. That's not an implausible argument for opponents of the current efforts to be making.
You mentioned the Supreme Court since the 70s when the ERA passed Congress and went to the states for ratification, which ultimately failed. You mentioned the Supreme Court has weighed in on gender equality significantly since then. But could that work be undone, especially without the ERA eventually reaching ratification?
I think that's a very good question, and it raises a good point. You know, 5 years ago, I probably would have said that the cases taking gender equality seriously as a constitutional matter from the 1970s, 80s, and 90s could never be undone. The court could never reverse course in that regard. But we live in interesting times, and depending on how the membership of the court changes, if Justice Kennedy leaves, et cetera, you could see some backsliding or significant undoing of some of these major gender equality precedents. And certainly adoption of the ERA today would prevent that from happening. So that's an important implication of ratification today.